Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Many of you who were following the show last week saw that I was trying to get some answers about $1 million that was given to Bridgeport last spring to help small businesses during the pandemic. And we talked to Mayor Joe Ganim about it, Senator Richard Blumenthal, and Dan Onofrio. And we were kind of sort of stuck in this place where we're really not sure what the deal is with it. So the city set up an interview, which I'm excited to have Thomas Gill here this morning, the director of the Office of Planning and Economic Development in Bridgeport. Thomas, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing fine, thanks. So first Good. And foremost, Thomas, when I brought this up to the mayor, I kept saying, you know, we've got $1 million sitting in Bridgeport. He didn't like that I called it that. But explain to me, what would that $1 million be if not sitting? Because I know businesses aren't benefiting from it at this point.
Well, Melissa, if we were using city capital or some form of state funding, I might agree with you that the money's just been sitting there. But the fact is that these funds are HUD care funding funds for block grant. And as you may know, HUD has a lengthy process and stringent requirements. So while we were notified that the city received some $2 million in CARE Act funding for CDBG, the fact of the matter is that by the time we got through the process of amending our PY45 plan, going to the Citizens Union, having public comment, going to the City Council, submitting the plan to HUD, we didn't actually enter into a contract for funding with HUD until September 3rd. And we didn't receive our funding until October 8th. So it's
okay.
Not like that money has just been sitting there and nothing was done with it. In the interim, what we did was we've been working with the Bridgeport Small Minority Business Office, Fred G's office, and with the BRBC to develop a program that, number one, meets the requirements of HUD, and number two, reaches out to those businesses, especially those businesses that did not, for whatever reason, access the other fundings from both the federal government and the state. So the plan is to get this money out in the form of grants to businesses that had difficulty receiving loans or other types of funding. Now, as you see, the state just announced the $50 million program also to distressed areas. And that's also going to be a grant program. But this money, you know, you really don't have to spend it for 6 years. That's not our intent. But I think timing's important because our funding will be available to these businesses during the tough months of January, February, and March, when they're going to have, probably the most difficulty, especially restaurants and so forth. So,
sure. I guess my question for you, Thomas, because there was a lot in there that I think makes sense. Obviously, I don't work at the government level, so mm-hmm. there are some things in there that kind of get lost. But for layman's terms, it sounds like there were a lot of processes that had to be done. But that money has been cleared, though, October 8th. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's correct.
Okay. So my question, I guess, would be, so the Bridgeport Regional Business Council said that they have everything basically set up. They know where those dollars should go. And I think that they'd argue waiting till January is going to lead more businesses out of business. So why are we at this point then going to wait another 4 months to see how many more people are going to fail and struggle? Why not use that money?
I didn't say we were going to necessarily wait 4 months. I said that this funding would go out in stages and probably could benefit businesses during the tough months coming forward.
So
if they receive a grant.
Okay.
We've worked very nicely with the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. They have come up with a process along with us and along with the Small Minority Business Office. But again, you know, we have to make sure that we fit into HUD requirements. And HUD has stringent requirements relative to duplication of federal funding. So that's an aspect that we have to be careful with, that if someone received federal funding already, they would not be eligible for this program.
So how soon can businesses see this money, ideally?
How soon? I would say we will probably have something available in November so that they could start their application process.
Okay. All right. Well, that's certainly good news. That's probably better than I think what some people were probably expecting. Again, talking to Thomas Gill this morning, the director of the Office of Planning and Economic Development in Bridgeport. And Thomas, you know, in the past, whenever a grant has been given to Bridgeport, has it always been this long of a process?
It depends on the funding source. HUD has very, as I said, strict requirements. There's a process in place that the city had put in place with HUD, and it requires, and especially in with this, you know, COVID and having to have telephonic meetings and so forth, it's we have to go through and develop a plan. The plan then goes to, as I said before, a citizens union who reviews it and makes recommendations. It's then put in the newspaper for public comment. Then it goes to the city council for a vote. Then it's submitted up to HUD. HUD reviews it, makes comments, and ultimately, if you've gotten the plan correctly and you fit their requirements, they'll approve it. And that's what happened here. And we got access finally to the funding on October 8th.
Okay. Well, Thomas Gill, we appreciate you giving some clarity this morning. Thank you so much. The director of the Office of Planning and Economic Development in Bridgeport. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you. My pleasure. Bye now.
Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield. So glad that you could be here. Brenda, how are you?
I'm good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you for asking. I'm so glad that you could be here. So I was pretty taken aback last week. I'm sure that you were at least aware of it ahead of time because I know you guys are there and you're checking on this constantly. But I was surprised that Fairfield was a hot spot. I really was. I don't know what your thoughts were on that.
Well, you know, the fact that we have two universities in town obviously puts us in a different category.
Sure.
I think, than other towns. So those numbers, you know, count toward our numbers. And so you have a lot of college age kids, young people, spending a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. And so what I do find interesting, and I think is important to note, I'm jumping on a call with the state again today with our health director. And, you know, they include our positive cases, the students, the positive cases in our total number, but they don't include the student population, the two universities, in our total entire town population.
Oh, wait, whoa, the math is off then. That's a huge, wait a minute, that's a huge difference.
Well, it's not gigantic, right? But it's 8,000 residents.
Right.
8,000, you know, so it skews the numbers. I don't know if it would have brought our rate down maybe to about 2 points, maybe not change that red alert status. But it is a concern about transparency and numbers, just to be completely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask them that today to see, you know, how they're aggregating that, just to have a better sense of that.
Okay. So if you take the universities out of the mix, where do you find the trouble spots have been in Fairfield?
Well, we did have, you know, I think it was about a month ago when you and I jumped on the line, maybe it was 3 weeks, where we had the little spike in at the high school level, mm-hmm. the high school population. And that was due to 6 identified parties that were reported to health department that did contact tracing. And they were high school kids, right? So, you know, varying levels of students, how many.
Mm-hmm.
So that spiked our numbers. And then they closed down. As you remember, they closed down Ludlow High School for a few days. And then they came back. So that's what we're seeing right now. But, you know, right now I mean, if you look at the overall data, if you look at everything, numbers are starting to spike up because we're doing a lot more testing. and the university, Fairfield U specifically, that had that spike, mm-hmm. they, you know, increased their testing dramatically, targeted testing, mm-hmm. because they're trying to make sure they know who has it, who has the virus, and then they are quarantining them. And so that's important, but that does increase the number.
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah. Yeah. I
so
mean,
we're all kind of, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, that's what we tried to point out even yesterday. Some people were kind of surprised that our statewide infection rate was still just above 2% when it was like more than 2,000 people tested positive. I said, yeah, but look at how many tests we did. We did over 90,000 tests this weekend. So the more tests, of course, you're going to identify it more, but it ends up kind of evening out a little bit. So if you do more tests, yes, you're going to find more people, but it seems like as a state staying about the same. So it looks like in Fairfield, we're doing more tests, but that's why we're identifying more cases.
Absolutely. It definitely correlates, right? But I think it just, you know, I know some people, especially our school-age parents, were very concerned because our superintendent made a decision after the red alert status was given to us by the state, which they had just, you know, developed and put out that week. And so the superintendent sent out an email saying he was pausing reopening to full in-person learning for our elementary school students, which is supposed to happen on November 12th. Mm-hmm. Now, when I try to explain to parents that he was pausing, he, you know, didn't say they wouldn't, you know, reevaluate and come back and say that students could go back on November 12th. He did say they were pausing. Mm-hmm. So I try to remind parents of that because they're feeling like they're upset. They think the universities are putting us in this category, and that their students are not able to go back to school full time. And it's a lot. There's a lot of factors that the school district takes into consideration. It's not just numbers. Mm-hmm. So it's teachers. You know, potentially how many teachers are only wanting to work remotely. That impacts their ability to be able to open full time. So there's a whole host of issues. Mm-hmm. And so I know everyone is on edge. Everyone is very stressed out, not just parents, but everybody in general.
Sure.
The pandemic fatigue is a real thing. It's a real thing.
Yes.
And I think we all have it. Mm-hmm. So I just keep reminding people, you know, we really need to be really careful. We can't just let our guard down. And that's what our health director is telling us when they do these contact tracings. You know, people say, oh yes, so I was at a dinner party and there was five or six people there and we had our masks off, or we got a little too close to one another because people are kind of letting their guard down.
Right.
And mm-hmm. that's where we're seeing, you know, the cases come up. Mm-hmm. So I just keep reminding, you know, we need to keep up our protocols. And it's wearing on everybody, but we do have to do our part.
Now, Brenda, when we've heard about towns or cities ending up in the red for the COVID data maps, we know the governor has kind of suggested, hey, you want to go back to phase two, that might be the better bet. So for restaurants going from 75% to 50% capacity, I know Norwalk had mentioned that they're not going to roll back. They're staying at phase three. They don't feel this is directly correlated with the restaurants. What about Fairfield? What is the fate for Fairfield restaurants and stores?
Right. So I felt the same way as Norwalk. Okay. When we got the red designation on Friday by the state, you know, I want to see where we're going, because those numbers that they were determining the red status were taken from October 7th to October 17th. So by the time we got them, it was past that date. And there was a lot of things that happened from that period of time that I think our numbers will start to trend down because of all the quarantining of the students and all the different things that we did, the contact tracing and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to make a hairpin decision, you know, a hair trigger decision. I want to see a little bit better. The numbers will come back on Thursday this week about how we did from the 17th on, and just to get a better sense, because you're talking about, you know, restaurants, for example, 50% to 75% capacity indoors. You know, I want to see the overall picture. I want to see where we go this week and take a look next week before I make any big decisions. I mean, you're talking about small businesses that are really struggling, and I don't see the spike based on what I've been given from our health department, that this is coming from businesses, mm-hmm. that our spikes are coming directly from businesses. But so we have to look at the overall picture before we make big decisions that are going to impact, I mean, small mom and pop residents who are running small businesses in our town, which have been a really difficult time.
Yeah. No,
over
no
this whole pandemic. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that it hurts our overall protection of our community, our public health.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to look at all of it. We had a lot, like I said, we had a spike at the high school level several weeks back because of parties. We had a spike in the university because of events, and they were a lot of different events. It wasn't mm-hmm. just one event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a party here. It was an athletic thing here. And so those things were pushing our numbers up. And so I just want to take a deep breath and look at all the data,
mm-hmm.
sit down with the emergency management team like we do constantly, and see where we are and then make a decision going forward.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that seems like I don't want to say the jarring conclusion here, because who am I? I'm a nobody. But the thing that I keep gathering, not just from Fairfield, but I think even surrounding areas, is this idea of gatherings. Like, it seems like that's the common denominator, even if it is for colleges. You know, like, we just reported this morning that Quinnipiac saw more. We saw more at Trinity. And, you know, and continuously on and on, whether it's colleges, high schools, or even just the common you and I, just residents, it's gatherings. It seems like that's where we're having a problem. And my question, I guess, to you, Brenda, I'm sure you've had to speak with, you know, with your residents or get the word out there. You know, the concern, I think, are the upcoming holidays, you know, like not even just Halloween, but I was saying, I think people can bypass Halloween. I think we're putting up a pretty good front of saying, you know, oh, it's hard to bypass trick or treating, but we could do it. I don't know if people are as strong to say, oh, well, it's hard that we're not going to spend Thanksgiving with family, or we're not going to spend Christmas with family. I think the next wave of holidays, I think, is going to be a bigger challenge when you're talking about gatherings being one of the biggest reasons for upticks.
I completely agree. We were just talking about this in the office yesterday, actually. And my staff, we were saying, you know, gee, how are we going to move forward? You mm-hmm. know, what are you going to do for the holiday? We were talking about, because Dr. Fauci mentioned, I think it was a week or so ago, that families and people, you know, residents across our country should pick one holiday to do. So he's kind of saying, like, don't really do Thanksgiving and do your bigger holiday
mm-hmm.
In December. But do it in a very reduced way. So you wouldn't have the normal amount of 15 to 20 people over your house like most of us do. And so we were just talking about this in the office. My chief of staff just said to me, it's probably just going to be me, my husband, and my parents. And I said, you know, I think it just might be the same for us, not the regular gathering, because that's what we're hearing from our medical professionals is those events, think about it, those events could really spike all the numbers, not just across Connecticut, but mm-hmm. across our country. Because mm-hmm. people are very, you know, they miss their families and they want to have a holiday. But you jam in 10, 12, 15 people in a house sitting next to each other at a dinner table, you know, sharing food and all of that, and there you go.
Yeah.
We could have, you know, we could all see spikes there. So I hope people are going to be really careful and make plans and understand that, you know, it's hard, and set up a tablet or, you know, an iPad on your dining room table, have a small amount of people, your intimate family,
mm-hmm.
and Zoom with everybody else in your extended family, because I think it could really have an impact on all the town's numbers, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Brenda Kupchick is here, the first select woman of Fairfield. And before I let you go, Brenda, is there anything that you are working out with? I know police shut down a pub this past weekend because they were violating COVID protocols. Is there anything in particular you have had to do differently since finding out that Fairfield was in the red, whether it's with the universities, whether it's with the high schools, or just in general for other people? Is there anything you've had to do differently?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're in a heightened sense of alert. I mean, we've been on, frankly, I would say the town has been on red alert since this whole thing started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were, our health department responds to every single complaint that comes in about restaurants, about stores, about you name it. People waiting outside for restaurants too close together, that kind of thing, and they go out. And so that shutting down of that pub was not due to the red alert. It was because we had received complaints, and after repeatedly going out there and explaining the rules and actually showing them how to do things the right way, they didn't do the things the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they were shut down. And so, Yes, I think we're doing, yes, we're doing things differently. We're still on red alert. We would have, like I said, we were on red alert anyway. We're all dealing, we're in the middle of a pandemic, regardless of our status, red, orange, yellow, whatever it is, we still have to be hyper-vigilant, and we have to make sure that we're protecting the public and we're giving them the information and we're reminding people constantly about what they need to do to make sure everyone stays safe in the community.
Makes a lot of sense. Brenda Kupchick, thank you so much for coming on this morning and giving us extra time. I really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure, Melissa. Always good to talk to you.
I feel the same way. I'll certainly have you on again really, really soon. That's First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield here on WICC 600. And a good morning to you. Hope you're having a good start to your Tuesday. Joining us now, Julius Dudix, who is the WICC 600 Morning Show Counselor. And something I brought up to Julius with being about a week out from the election is how much anxiety and stress people are feeling over, especially the presidential election. I find that people are literally having breakdown moments. They are sick to their stomachs. It is impacting the way that they do their work, the way that they parent, the way that they even have whatever mood it is that day. This is driving their everyday lives. And I wanted a little bit of help from Julius to kind of pull back on that and sort of recenter ourselves. So, Julius, thanks for coming on this morning. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
This is a hard concept, Julius. I'm going to come right out.
You couldn't have said it any better by saying people have so much anxiety over things they can't control. The election, the COVID, the mother-in-law, the father-in-law. It's about our reaction to them.
So we understand, I think the basis of it is obviously, you know, in layman's terms. So, for example, like you bring up in-laws, let's just say. So if you have a family member who says mean things, does mean things, you have no control over their actions, their words, any of that. So
correct.
I think we understand that concept. But I think to live by that concept, that's a totally different thing.
Right. And sometimes you have to love from a distance. You have to take a break and just know that they're not going to change. But you're only accountable for your own reactions and how much power you give other people over you. And that's where you really have to kind of pinpoint, why is it that I have such issues with my mother-in-law or father-in-law, especially around the holidays coming up? Families are going to be gathering or perhaps not gathering because of COVID. But you've got to really ask yourself some deep questions about what is really driving me to think the way I think, what's really the source of the anxiety, because in the counseling process, 80 to 90% is just really uncovering why I think the way I think and where does it come from.
And I think with the election, Julius, I think the big thing is I understand. Here's the thing is I don't want people to think I'm coming on here going, your emotions don't matter, your feelings don't matter. That's absolutely not what I'm saying, because it's legitimate. You know, for example, and this doesn't mean I am saying, you know, which way the election should go. But I know, let's just say, for example, if Joe Biden gets in, you know, I know that a lot of people are worried about healthcare and keeping Obamacare. But if President Trump gets in, I know a lot of women are worried about women's rights. I know that many people are worried about the Black community. I know that people are worried about LGBTQ rights and so on and so forth. Both are coming into an office that whether or not whoever gets in, it is going to impact communities. It's going to impact families. It's going to impact our nation. That being said, though, there's literally nothing it's not like we can go to the White House and remove that person, right? You know, I think that's the part that I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in something that we literally have no control over. We just don't.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And really, in that sense, you really only got to take care of what you can take care of. And you've got to lower the expectation on your end. You've got to really care for yourself. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating healthy? Are you exercising? If this is an oppressive issue for you, then you need to get some help and you need to talk to somebody to really get it out and put it out there, because the more you internalize it, the worse you're going to feel.
Talking to Julius Dudix this morning, he's our counselor here on the morning show. Julius, how do you begin? Okay, so we've got the concept in our minds, right? We're doing a little counseling session right now. I understand it, let go of control. Our listeners understand it. We got to let go of control. It's a lot easier said than done, though. So what are some starting steps to start and really live a life where you have more peace and you're not letting outside forces control who you're going to be.
Yeah, what you want to do is, again, you want to take a step out of the woods, and you want to begin to ask yourself some difficult questions about why I feel the way I feel. Pinpoint the source of the anxiety. Is it the election? Is it the COVID? Is it whomever? And then what you want to do is you want to say, how can I better respond to those situations? And what is within my power to control? And Melissa, it may boil back down to, I have to accept what I can't change. But that is so hard for people, and change those things that are within my ability to change. Mm-hmm. That's so hard. So hard, though. That's why it's important to really get some professional help if you really need that, if these thoughts are oppressive.
Mm-hmm. I can remember, Julius, I was telling my listeners about an hour ago that when I worked in Vermont, a very Democratic state, pretty much. I mean, it's home of Bernie Sanders, so it's really no new news. But when I worked up there as a reporter, I remember when President Trump was elected over Hillary Clinton. And I remember walking in, because I was a morning news anchor at the time. I remember walking into my station, and there was one reporter there who was very stoic. I mean, this was somebody who just was one of our most reliable, very professional, really never knew any emotion or opinion out of her. She was very fact-based, probably one of the best reporters I think I've ever worked with. But this moment that I saw her, I just thought, who is this person? She collapsed to the floor and just burst out crying and said, I don't even know how I can wake up in the morning. I don't even know how I can function. How are we going to get through 4 years of Trump? And I just remember thinking, wait, really? really? I mean, I understand that things are going to change, but you don't know how you're going to get up in the morning? Like, I just, and I think that a lot of people feel this way. I really do.
Yeah. The issue is you got to really build your life on truth. What's the truth? Because in the political landscape, sometimes you really don't know what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, you know, Trump gets in, and let's say all of a sudden the Affordable Care Act is gone. Does that mean specifically that there are going to be so many without insurance? What is the truth?
Right.
And that's a hard thing to really kind of ascertain. But you've got to build your life on truth and not what you think is the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good advice. Julius, if people want to reach out to you, they want to get the help that they probably need through this really difficult time. And honestly, I think the more we normalize it, the more that people won't be afraid to get help. Where can they reach out to find you?
Sure. You can look me up on Facebook, or you can look me up on LinkedIn, or a website, www.barkbark. I've got a full profile there, website, and also cell phone is 203-243-7714.
Julius, always appreciate getting your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a good day.
You too.